Folks, we'll call the meeting to order. We do have enough for a quorum, so we're good to go. The LA will note the roll as you come and go. I'm sorry, I looked at the witness and it just popped into my head. So. quorum members. That's Let's, since we do have a quorum, I will entertain a motion to discuss the minutes.
I'd move that we pass the minutes.
All right. Looking them over, any other comments or questions, corrections, members? Hearing none, let's vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. We've adopted the minutes. And we've had extensive testimony on House File 615 and I think 867 as well in our last meeting, members. So we're going to bring these back today to complete them and wrap them up. Representative Biskins, would you like to tell the committee where we're at in the process? And I believe you have an amendment you'd like us to consider.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I'd like to move House File 615 as amended be passed and we referred to the Committee on Public Safety.
Thank you. That's the motion. Yes.
Mr. Chair and members, this bill, I do have a delete all amendment in your packet, the DE1 amendment. And Mr. Chair, if it is your desire, I'd like to ask Mr. Burris to explain to the committee what the heck I'm doing with my delete all amendment.
Members and representative, before we adopt the DE amendment, there's been some work going on offline about this, no pun intended. So if Mr. Burris would explain the DE1 amendment before we vote on it to put the bill in the shape the author wishes, we'll have Mr. Burris explain.
Mr. Chair and members, the DE amendment essentially is a technical change. There isn't a substantive difference between what the committee had been considering with the original bill as amended and the DE amendment. The reason for the amendment has to do with there being two different bills, this one and House File 867, that address the same driver's instruction permit provision, but handle things technically in slightly different ways. The two provisions aren't incompatible, but from a structural and editorial standpoint, adding this delete all amendment would make it easier if both provisions were to be enacted independently. It would make it easier for the statutes to be able to be produced in alignment and reflect the both sets of policy provisions.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Burris. Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of this committee. When I first introduced this bill, I was very specific in saying that this bill and the provisions of this bill have absolutely nothing to do with the behind-the-wheel component of your driver's training program. That still remains so. The next bill deals with that. This bill is talking solely about the classroom and the written test. The amendment then is simply technical to ensure that if both were to pass into law, they would be compatible. And I believe in talking to Mr. Burris, these changes, even if the other bill was not passed into law, still would not cause a problem with current statute.
Thank you. Members, are there questions or discussion to the DE1 amendment? Questions or discussion? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor of the DE1 amendment, signify by aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Representative Biskins, your bill is amended as you wish. Representative Biskins, there is an A1 amendment. Is that yours?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chairman.
Would you like to move that as well?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I move the A1 amendment to be before the committee. And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as we know, there was a fiscal note that was provided on this bill. The fiscal note came to approximately $30,000 that the commissioner deemed necessary to write the conforming rules to allow for online learning, rules particularly dealing with quality and of the providers that they would actually be asked to approve. This amendment creates a revenue stream to this activity so that it then becomes a zero-sum game. And at the bottom line, it creates a $2 certificate fee for each student who passes the course. Now, there are other added benefits if you think about this. If there is going to be a certificate issued to a student who passes that course and that certificate is numbered, as in the provision, we can now, DPS does have the tools necessary then to do some analysis of students who take this online course in the long run. But if you also notice the last sentence, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, is that this fee blinks off, for lack of a better word, once the cost of providing the rulemaking and the Internet Drivers Education Program has been met. So it is truly fee-based in that the fee is not an ongoing revenue stream for anyone, but it's actually a fee necessary to pay for the service we're asking the agency to conduct. And I would appreciate your support.
Thank you. That's the explanation of the A1 amendment. Are there questions to the A1 amendment, members? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Now the bill is amended and ready for final discussion and moving it on to public safety. Representative Biskins, do you have any final comments?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to get into a quarrelsome situation.
Okay, so thank you. Members, questions or comments to the bill, Representative Morrow?
Not to get into a quarrelsome situation. I did tell Representative Biskins beforehand I was going to make a comment, not asking a question. My comment would be, again, I mentioned the Wisconsin study of Internet driver education, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, it states in part that discussion board participation is required by most online courses. It later talks about the importance of instructor interaction with students, usually between in a question-answer type of format, not just a multiple-choice type of format. I don't know what the present providers offer, but I would say that I would think that a course should involve discussion-based participation. It might ameliorate some of the concerns. Mr. Chair, I think this bill should go to K-12. I know it's going to public safety, but to me this is more of an education issue than a transportation issue, though I do respect those in our committee. I would hope this bill would go to K-12 policy so that people well-versed in education and online education could have a look at this bill.
Thank you for your comments. Representative Leidinger, first of all, Representative Biskins, you need to respond to that or Representative Leidinger's comments?
In my summation remarks, I'll respond.
Thank you,
Representative Mr. Chairman, mine is on the fiscal note. Mm-hmm. Does this still apply to this, or has that amendment taken care of that? Is this a zero?
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Weidiger, with the amendment that's passed, the fiscal note will now read zero. However, you know, to be very fair, what we are asking is the Department of Public Safety to front end the $30,000 to create the rulemaking, and then they pick it up on the back end once the courses are online and certificates are starting to be passed out for students who successfully complete.
Thank you for the clarification. Further comments, members, questions? Seeing none, Representative Vistens, you get the last word.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Morrow's question, I really do appreciate that. And this bill does not preclude an Internet provider having that kind of relationship. And, in fact, I would envision that some would and then would probably market it in that way, that your child will have this kind of interaction. As per the K-12 issue, if our driver's ed programs were solely run out of K-12, then I would strongly agree with Representative Morrow. However, our private driver's ed instructors are not under the oversight of K-12, and so there I think we already have the model in place.
Thank you. Members, the motion before us is to recommend it pass and send it to public safety. All those in favor say, Representative Hornstein, are we ready to vote?
Or? Just ready to vote.
All right, thank you. Just being observant, that's all. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The bill is passed to public safety.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Biskins and members. House Bill 867, Representative Bruce Anderson. And again, we had some good testimony and discussion last time we were here. May I have a motion to put 867 in front of us, and this one is going to be going to the General Register. Members, Representative Benson, would you do that for us?
I move that the bill pass and be taken to the General Register.
Okay, thank you. Representative Benson, Representative Anderson, House Bill 867 is in front of us for consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, we do have a delete all amendment that was mentioned by Mr. Burris earlier regarding the previous bill, Representative Biskins. I'd just like to have Mr. Burris speak to the delete all amendment.
Before Mr. Burris does that, Representative Benson, would you be so kind as to move the DE1 amendment to 867?
I would move that we...
Thank you. Mr. Burris, do you want to explain the DE1 and what it does for us?
Mr. Chair and members, this is the other half of the two provisions dealing with issuance of an instruction permit. Again, this is a technical amendment that redoes the language a bit, but primarily does a structural change so that both this provision and Representative Biskin's provision, or the provision carried by Representative Biskin's, if they were both enacted independently, would easily align with each other when the statutes come out.
Questions for Mr. Burris about the DE1? Members, seeing none, let's vote. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Representative Anderson, the bill is amended into the form you wish, and if you'd explain your fiscal note and...
Thank you.
Proceed.
Chairman Beard, this bill actually does two things, two requirements covering when a person under age 18 can obtain, an instruction permit. First, it allows issuance of a permit to someone who has not yet completed the classroom phase of driver's education, but is enrolled in approved driver's education program, completes at least 15 hours of classroom instruction, and it completes at least one hour behind the wheel lesson. Second, it modifies the set and order of precedence of adults who can approve the application for an instruction permit. And it was mentioned in testimony last few days ago that this is already in the national standards. Uniform guidelines and was passed out to members who have that state highway safety program, and also mentions the novice driver education and training standards. The big thing was the 1.1.22 to ensure that instruction of novice teen drivers is completed using concurrent and integrated classroom and in-car instruction, where the bulk of the classroom instruction occurs close in time to the in-car instruction to ensure maximum transfer of skills. So it integrates your in-class plus your behind the wheel to give its driver's instructors the student the kind of behind the wheel instruction and on the job driving skills. So that's kind of the gist of the delete all amendment, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Members, questions or comments to the bill as amended? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. I heard this bill. Did we hear it here? Did we hear it? It was heard here. Okay. When we heard this bill earlier, the same time we heard the bill about online driver's education. Now, how would that work if that bill were to pass and this bill were to pass? How would those two mesh together? Because I think they're kind of diametrically opposed to one another. If they're doing the online, how can you, you know, be guaranteed of having the 15 hours and all that fun stuff? Because they're kind of disconnected between the behind the wheel and the online, with the online and the way classes go now.
Representative Anderson, can you address that for us?
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, I don't know that answer to that question, because that was a totally different subject matter. I guess unless Mr. Burris would have some kind of an indication, because he was working with the delete all amendments in both cases, how they would integrate that.
Well, Representative Anderson, I was about to call on Mr. Burris after I made a comment that it would appear, members, in reading these bills, that Representative Anderson is looking for an exception to how you get a learner's permit to get behind the wheel. So if you're going to look for the exception, it would seem to preclude going through the online portion. You'd actually have to do this physical presence somewhere. That's what I would think. But let's ask Mr. Burris to keep us out of the deep weeds on that.
Mr. Chair and members, that would be my read of the interaction between the two, that one flow would be taking, if both provisions were enacted, one flow would be taking online driver's ed, having a complete online driver's ed, and then pursuing the sort of traditional route of online driver's ed being completed, receiving, applying for, meeting all the other requirements to receive the instruction permit, including having been enrolled in behind the wheel, and then commencing behind the wheel after the fact. The second flow would be independent from that, where it would be a classroom, it would be a combination of classroom, driver's ed, classroom portion, as well as behind the wheel happening at the same time through the same physical program without an online learning component under that scenario.
Follow up, Representative Nelson.
Well, I guess the other follow-up I have, it's a separate question, is it says here, is there a Senate file to this bill? It says in our thing that there is not, but is there a Senate file to this bill?
Representative Anderson, are you aware of the Senate file and how it's doing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, there is not, but they are seeking an author at this time to have a Senate file introduced. So they're looking for an author over there, and I think they've got somebody. Don't know the name yet, but they're working on different individuals to work with it. So,
thank you. Further questions, comments, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had a testifier in here yesterday, I think during the Biskins bill, Mrs. Puff's driving school, whatever, and it sounded like she was going to seek being able to do both of these, the traditional and the online. Are we going to come back here in another session and have to clarify this and say there's a natural breakpoint in the online in which someone could enroll?
Representative Anderson, you want to take a stab at that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, I'm hoping not, but it's very possible that it could come back to that. I do have a testifier here that I'll back my bill if you want them to come forward. But
follow up.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe this is for Mr. Burris. Would the language in either one of these preclude someone from being able to do this midstream at some natural point in the online? Would it prohibit that person from taking the driver's portion?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, as I read the two amendments that have been adopted, yes, it would prohibit doing both routes.
And further questions, comments? Representative Anderson, remind us about the $20,000 fiscal note that comes with your bill. Was that here on Monday when we heard your bill originally?
Mr. Chair, it was not here on Monday. This is the first time I've seen the fiscal note that's come back to me.
Perhaps Ms. Zewers can explain the fiscal note and where the costs come from. And Ms. Zewers.
Mr. Chair and members, the fiscal note is $20,000. It's a one-time cost in fiscal year 12, and it is for rulemaking.
Okay, the rulemaking process. Understood. Thank you. Representative Morrow.
Well, Mr. Chair, just to follow up on that, with Representative Biskin's bill, we had a $2 certificate fee that was going to be charged to cover that rulemaking. Representative Anderson, is there going to be a similar amendment to cover this rulemaking cost, or will you be amending your bill to have a certificate or other fee?
Representative Anderson, it leaves here. It goes to the General Register, and I'll remind you, their Senate file hasn't moved yet, but what you're thinking on covering the cost here.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Morrill, that's I'll bring it up with the people that we're talking with and see if that can work. I know that in other times where I brought up and asked for something like a fee to be added to, there's been an objection to that as far as a fees being added to it. But I'll see what can work out as far as that being put forward as an amendment and bring it forward on the floor.
Good. Thank you for calling it to our attention. Further questions or comments? Last word before we vote?
Well, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Representative Nelson, I'm sorry, I didn't see her.
Mr. Chair, in lieu of the, or because of the fiscal note, shouldn't this have to go to finance or to ways and means to make sure it balances out against the budget targets? Because before it goes to the floor, I guess that's just a question I'm asking for procedure.
Good question. Just a moment here. Well, there's a couple ways to go here. We could lay it over until we get this worked out. We could send it to Ways and Means for a stop, or we could ask Ms. McCormick to come down and maybe educate us on how the rulemaking process works and where they usually acquire the money for that, or if they need a specific revenue stream. Ms. McCormick, could we impose on you to come down and talk about that for just a moment? Ms. McCormick, did you understand the issue that we're looking at here? If you
yes.
could comment to it and how it's usually accommodated, or if we need to send it to Ways and Means for budgetary work, we'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, Mr. Chair and members, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services with the Department of Public Safety. Mm-hmm. And as you know, we are a fee-based operation, and we receive fees for our services, and those are distributed between a driver services special revenue account and a vehicle services special revenue account. And certainly this would be something that would be paid for out of our driver services special revenue account, but we would have to have an appropriation in order to be able to pay for the rulemaking. And the rulemaking, as we estimated, is based on the Office of Administrative Hearings, lists various types of rules and what the costs would probably be for something like this. And because there is, we feel there are a lot of issues that would have to be addressed in this rulemaking, that was how we based the cost of what we thought the rulemaking would require.
Okay. Thank you. So that'd be an appropriation. And at this moment, right off the top of my head, I'm not sure whether we can fix that in conference committee or whether we ought to hold it until we get absolute direction on how we can accomplish that. So let's amend the motion then, members, to lay the bill over. And we'll get that information. Ms. McCormick, thank you for being available to us.
And I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. And
we'll bring this back on Monday once we know what's going on.
Get it straightened out, and hopefully that will work out to address the $20,000 that is on the fiscal note. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Members, further questions or comments or things we might have missed? Seeing none, the Chair will lay the bill over, and we'll take this up on Monday.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Mack, House Bill 1289. Members, I'm looking for a volunteer to move the bill to bring it before us.
Representative Hornstein. I'd happily move this bill.
All right. Representative Hornstein gets into the minutes by moving House Bill 1289, and we're going to...
I believe this can go to the General Register, is that correct?
Actually, Public Safety has asked for it, Representative
Public
Hornstein.
Safety. Okay, I would move the passage of the bill and have it directed to Public Safety.
Outstanding. Thank you. Representative Mack, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, I'll just give a brief introduction of House File 1289, and then I have a testifier here, one of the Dakota County Commissioners, to give a little bit more of an overview. Members, I am here today to bring this bill before you to expand the operating parameters for transit bus operation on highway shoulders. Construction will begin in just a few days on the Cedar Avenue Bus Rapid Transit shoulder lanes. When this construction is complete in 2012, Cedar Avenue BRT vehicles will travel on the shoulders of Cedar Avenue from Lakeville to the Mall of America, Minneapolis, and St. Paul. This project is necessary to alleviate the congestion in this heavily used corridor. It is estimated that by 2030, this line will provide the same commuter capacity as an additional 1.5 lanes of highway. Additional capacity in this corridor is not in MnDOT's future plans for this corridor, and even if they were to be built, the Cedar Avenue Bridge cannot carry additional lanes without major reconstruction. This expanded authority will not help just the Cedar BRT line, but other transit lines in Minnesota. And with that, members, I'd like to turn it over to Nancy Schuweiler, one of the Dakota County Commissioners, to give a little bit more of an overview.
Members, before I introduce Ms. Schuwalter, in your packet there's two helpful handouts that kind of illustrate what we're dealing with on the Cedar Avenue BRT, one of my favorite projects. Ms. Schuwalter, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Beard and members of the committee. I'm Commissioner Nancy Schuweiler from Dakota County, and I appreciate the opportunity to express my support for House File 1289 here today. This enabling legislation, authored by Representative Mack, provides an important tool that can be used to improve the efficiency of transit operations on bus shoulders around the Twin Cities region. It would allow buses to operate on shoulders for expanded hours of operation and potentially up to the posted speed limit based on findings of engineering study and approval by the Commissioner of Transportation. This bill is consistent with recent efforts to maximize the operation of our regional transportation system with safe, cost-effective management techniques. Such flexibility to maximize the operation of bus shoulders may not only benefit existing use by express buses where conditions warrant such changes, but will also be important to maximize operations for the region's highway shoulder running bus rapid transit. The region's first two BRT lines, Cedar Avenue and I-35W, will both begin operation in 2012. As gas prices skyrocket and dollars remain limited to make major expansion improvements to our highway system, these BRT lines will provide a convenient, fast, and cost-effective alternative to our congested highways. Specifically, on Cedar Avenue, the bus shoulders have been engineered to provide a 12-foot paved surface that provides for both the bus use and emergency use without the need for additional bus lanes, right-of-way business impacts, or costs. It is desired to run station-to-station bus vehicles as all-day service utilizing these lanes without the need to weave in and out of regular traffic lanes. Further, the speed limit provision of this legislation may allow the buses to run at the 40 or 45 mile per hour posted speed of adjacent travel lanes rather than the current 35 miles per hour to minimize the travel times for station-to-station service. Travel times are a critical factor in the eventual success of BRT as riders see the service as a quick and efficient alternative to their personal vehicles. Of course, safety is the primary concern of any transportation agency, and that is certainly the case here. This legislation is only enabling and requires engineering study by the Road Authority, followed by concurrence by the Commissioner of Transportation. This is similar to the approach to how speed limits are set today and ensures important factors specific to the bus shoulders in question will be considered before any changes are made. In closing, I would like to thank Commissioner Sorrell and his MnDOT staff for their hard work in preparing this bill and their efforts to help improve operations of shoulder-running BRT and bus services in the region. I ask the committee for your support of this bill, and I'm here to answer any questions if needed.
Members, questions or comments? I can think of two that I'd like just to make sure we're clarified on, Ms. Schuweiler. The shoulders. Shoulder-running now is only on trunk highways, which is part of the reason we need this legislation, because if I remember right, south of the zoo exit, that is actually not a trunk highway, is it?
That's
that a county?
Correct.
Thank you. So this will allow the Road Authority, in this case Dakota County, I suspect, to actually engage in shoulder running. Okay. The second one is in the 35 mile an hour maximum speed limit. I'm thinking more about one of my favorite ex-engineers was Connie over at MnDOT. He used to say, speed doesn't necessarily kill, speed differential kills. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that the engineering study will talk about that, if we can go to 45 on the shoulders. Is that related? Will that be related to the traffic, the speed of the traffic in the adjacent lane?
Yes, it would.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification. Members, further questions or comments? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This is very helpful, I think, in terms of our overall system planning for bus rapid transit. As Commissioner Showalter mentioned, this also applies to 35W, although we have a little bit more of a dedicated lane there. But I think there's also some consideration now being given to I-94 east of downtown St. Paul, going towards Woodbury. It's called the Gateway Corridor. I think there's a couple of others we're considering. So I think we need to look at this in terms of, you know, our broader goals for developing high-speed bus system and bus rapid transit. It's a good bill, and thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you. With that, Representative Hornstein renews his motion that this bill be passed and re-referred to public safety members. Wait, excuse me. I'm ahead of myself. Is there anyone else in the audience that feels to testify on this bill? Mr. Rudine, I almost left you out of the show. I'm sorry.
Thank you for coming forward. Very brief. Eric Rudine, MnDOT Government Affairs. I just wanted to thank Representative Mack for carrying the bill for us. We've been working with Dakota County since last summer. And although the impetus for this bill is the Cedar Avenue Busway Project, this would apply to any future busways in the metro area, or for that matter in greater Minnesota as well. So we're excited about this legislation and appreciate your support.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Rudine from any of the members? Comments? Anyone else? Thank you, Mr. Rudine. Anyone else need to testify for or against? Seeing none, now Representative Hornstein renews his motion that this bill be passed and referred to public safety. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is passed to public safety. Representative Mack, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Quam has House File 1208. Is Representative Quam here yet? There we go. Members, while Representative Quam is coming, there's a handout that kind of illustrates the thrust of Representative Quam's bill. And if I can have a member move House File, let's see, it'll be 1208, and this bill will be held over for possible inclusion.
So moved.
Representative Benson from down in Rochester area as well. Thank you for your motion. Representative Quam, welcome to the committee. The bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is to take care of a somewhat of an oversight. Rochester had Highway 52 redone some years ago. In that activity, there were walls put up to abate the noise, and there were several businesses that had prominent visibility from the highway and near the exit that lost that visibility and had the understanding that there would be signs similar to what we see when we drive through the metro area, alerting people to restaurants and other activities that they can exit and go to. And this bill is just to take care of that oversight and have a appropriate sign put up.
Pretty simple and straightforward. And now we're looking at your handouts, Mr. Quam, Representative Quam. The one with the picture of Red Wing shoes, the noise wall, I can see where it blocks sight lines clear up to the eaves. Is that going to continue all the way along there, or is that an opening for, is it completed there, or is that an opening for an on or off ramp?
There is a, I do not have a copy of that picture, actually. Okay, that was during the construction. There is a wall that continues on, and that's not visible. Plus, there are three restaurants that are in a similar situation to that one business.
Okay. Let's see, and then the proposal would be that there. Now I'm looking at this. This your handout as well, or is this MnDOT's?
I believe that's MnDOT's. I apologize for not having copies of.
No, that's great. They came to the committee, so you wouldn't have access. And I was assuming that these were your handouts. Apparently, MnDOT will be testifying in a moment, and this is their information. Representative Quam.
Mr. Chair, I would like to point out that the photo is taken backwards from where the ramp meets up with 37th Street. If you were actually to drive 52 or be on the off-ramp, you would not have this visibility.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification. Members, questions for Representative Kwan before we call MnDOT down? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Kwan. Are we looking for to put a sign up for one business? Are there multiple? You mentioned three businesses that were blocked. I guess, what's the parameters of this? Are we looking for putting 100 different signs up for 100 different businesses, or is it just one or two that no longer have visibility and people would not know where they are?
Representative Baum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson. The intent is to have similar to, you know, signs we see here with 4 to 6 icons on it to cover the businesses that were there and suffered through disruption of business, plus the decrease in traffic that you would normally have if you had the visibility. I believe that would include 4 businesses, 3 restaurants, and then the one that has a bit of a, you know, you can see in this photo.
Okay, Representative Nelson, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kwan. And from the signs that I have seen driving, not just in the metro area, they're on the freeway system as you drive across the country and across our state, that they're basically pointing out gas and food places and lodging. There's also lodging ones. I don't know if I've ever seen a shoe store one before on there. So that's, I guess that's why I'm asking how many we're looking at. And going down, I think the restaurants would probably already qualify for what the MnDOT's rules are. I guess it's more so probably the Red Wing Shoe Store that's probably not within the rules of what they normally give notice about.
Further, thank you, Representative Kwan. Further questions for Representative Kwan before we ask, I believe, Cassandra Isaacson from MnDOT to come and speak to us. Ms. Isaacson? Welcome to the committee. And I'm sorry, I attributed your, these must be your pictures?
Yes.
Okay, I thought they were Representative Kwan. There you.
That's all right.
Please proceed.
My name is Cassandra Isaacson. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and I'm here to testify regarding this. In your handouts, you have a photograph of that is the completed noise wall in the area in question. This segment of roadway, if you're unfamiliar, is now basically a freeway. So it looks and operates like a freeway with the big green overhead guide signs, that sort of thing. And this is in the area of an interchange. That's why the noise wall ends there, is because of the interchange ramp. But also in your handout, you'll find this document. And I would just like briefly to explain a little bit about highway signing to kind of clarify a few things. First of all, when it comes to signing, there's three types of signs. There's regulatory signs, warning signs, and guide signs. Regulatory signs, speed limit, stop signs. Warning signs are the yellow diamonds, you know, curve ahead, that kind of thing. And then guide signs are basically everything else. And so primary guide signs are the ones that tell you the road you're on, the road that's intersecting, the city you're in. And then everything else, all other kinds of signs that are blue and brown and green like these, are supplemental signs. They're signs that we can install if there's space available. And the way we know what types of facilities to put on these, we get the federal government publishes the Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices, this big, heavy book. It's the reason that all stop signs are red. If you think that it's difficult for politicians to agree on something, you should try and get a group of engineers to agree on something. So the federal government gives us some guidelines on things, and so no matter where you go, you're going to see a red stop sign. And the guidance for supplemental signs is basically that we sign for motorist services. So there's going to be gas stations, restaurants, hotels, that sort of thing, and then a general category of tourist-oriented destinations. And so with that, MnDOT has developed policies, and on the back of that document, you'll find these. Some of this information is in state law. There's two categories of these signs that are in state law, and then some of them are just in our policies. We've developed policies. We mostly work with trade organizations, external partners to develop guidance. And when I'm saying guidance and policies, it's things like you know, a gas station, for example. We want it to be open a certain number of hours a day, number of days per week. It would be a disservice to the motoring public if they exited a freeway only to find that a gas station was only open 2 hours a day. You know, we want the public, when they're going to leave the roadway, to get to a facility that's open. In all of our policies, and in both state and federal policies and law, strictly retail establishments are not the kind that are signed for. So a shoe store would not be something that would be signed in any of our policies. The two ones that I want to really draw to your attention to, on the bottom right is specific services, and the top left is logo. The top right is logo, the bottom left here is specific services. But the logo signs are for freeways. Those are the ones that have McDonald's, gas stations, all that. And the bottom one, the specific service, those are signs for two-lane highways, rural in nature. This is an urban area, certainly not rural, and it is a freeway. And so the only types of signs that would be allowed would be these, more of these logo signs, the ones on the, and then the bigger traffic generators. There are logo signs in this corridor. And I'm not sure if there's actually logo signs at this interchange today. MnDOT has a contract with a company that manages those programs, and they are very active at going out and identifying restaurants, asking if they want to be on signs, if there's space available. Because signs do need to be a certain distance apart, and so sometimes that is an issue. So we are concerned that this legislation would not only introduce specific service signs onto a freeway, which is where we've never had that kind of signing on freeways, but that it also that it also is for a specific business rather than going through our normal processes.
Thank you for your comments and for explaining the rules. Members, questions for Ms. Isaacson? Representative Benson?
Are there any exceptions? I know that when we build freeways, quite often now we have to do noise abatement walls, like you can see in the picture there. But are there any ever any exceptions in negotiating with businesses that are located behind those sound walls, if they're not, you know, some that are delineated in your examples here? So, for example, shoe store. I mean, do you ever negotiate with some of those businesses when you put a sound wall up that we need to mitigate that? The problem that now exists because of the wall?
Ms. Isaacson?
Mr. Chairman, I'm unaware if a specific negotiation like that takes place with noise walls. I know there's lots of discussions. I do understand the issue of visibility. The reality is most businesses aren't visible from highways, and so it would be difficult for us to sign for all of them. When it comes to this type of signing, it's particularly on freeways, retail is just something that is, it's not, we just don't sign for it. It's not the type of signing that motorists expect to have. They just don't. Mm-hmm. And the federal rules also guide us in how we should do that, and retail is not one of the categories.
Follow up?
Yeah, follow up. There was one other area, if you know that stretch of Route 52, the Miracle Mile area, mm-hmm. and large shopping center, and no sound wall, that mm-hmm. at least. But when you go down a little bit further, there's one Hillcrest Shopping Center. Mm-hmm. There were no signs placed in that to delineate the fact that there's Hillcrest Shopping Center in there.
Ms. Isaacson, do you recall that?
Mr. Chairman, I'm unfamiliar with that.
Thank you. Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Isaacson or Representative Quam, is there anything that local ordinances or any state statutes that would prohibit Red Wing Shoe Store for putting up a taller sign?
Ms. Isaacson or Representative Quam, either one.
Mr. Chairman, I'm unfamiliar with that. I know that there are facilities that have signs that you can see where you're driving along that you can see above the noise wall, and so, but that would be a city question. It would be within their ordinances, I believe. And Mr. Yeah. Chairman, and also one other statement I'd like to make. This project was completed a number of years ago, and at that time, the shoe store asked for signs. When MnDOT says no based on these policies, we have a group of volunteers that review our decision. These are individuals that come from Minnesota Tourism, Chamber of Commerce, AAA, county engineers, people that would typically be asking us for signs. So there we present our case to them, why we said no, they review it, and they actually make recommendations on whether or not we should have a variance from our policy and allow someone to be signed. When they heard the Red Wing shoe store case, they said no, that we should not sign for them.
Thank you for that, clarifying the appeals process, because that's important for the committee to know as well. Representative Gauthier, follow up, or did I answer the question?
If I may, Mr. Chair. Representative Quam, do you know of any city ordinance that would prohibit that?
Representative Quam?
I'm not aware of a specific ordinance. I do know that they have gone through recently because of the video signs, mm-hmm. and have redone their ordinances and put some additional restrictions. I'd have to look at that. This happens to be in the district between Representatives Benson and I, but in the same Senate district, mm-hmm. and this bill originated from the Senator Sinjum, mm-hmm. and the intent was, it boils down to there was an implied mitigation, at least on the part of the business owner, when this went through, and this was to try and follow forward on that, and then also alleviate for the group of businesses that are in that area.
Okay. Thank you, Representative.
Just comment.
Certainly.
The reason I asked is because when I was on the City Council in Duluth, we redid all our ordinances with our whole code, and signs was a big one that kept coming back. And so, unfortunately, I think we're dealing with a local control issue here. And
that hasn't slowed us down before, but thanks for bringing it up.
No, I understand that, Mr. Chair, but it seems to me that that's where the solution needs to be found.
Thank you for your comments. Representative Nelson, were you seeking to speak to further questions or comments before we lay this bill over for possible inclusion? I have just one stray comment, Ms. Isaacson. My Legion ballpark sells the fence. Just a thought. Just take that to the engineers and see what they think. We're going to pay for sound walls. It's just a thought. Okay, being serious again for a moment. Further questions or comments? Anyone else in the audience need to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, the chair will lay the bill over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Quam. The next bill on the agenda is Representative Garofalo, my favorite rep from Farmington.
Really, Mr. Chairman, 7 years and you can't say my last name right yet? I'm starting to think that you might do that on purpose, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garofalo needs someone to move his bill to get it in front of the committee. Who would like to do that? Where are we going to send this bill? Well, this one lays over for possible inclusion as well. Thank you. Representative Murray, would you like to do that?
Mr. Chairman, I would move House File 1374 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion.
Well, you can't do both those things, right?
Yeah, well, we'll take over the layover part. Oh. All right. Yes. Thank you for the motion, Representative Murray. Representative Garofalo, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will be brief, and there will be, I believe, testifiers will be voicing concerns about my bill. Okay. House File 1374 comes from a bill that was originally initiated 2 years ago in the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill. We passed, on a bipartisan basis, we passed a bill allowing for a deputy registrar's office to be opened in the city of Farmington. That bill was subsequently vetoed because of other matters in the bill. In 2010, the item came back once again in an Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill and was passed by the legislature. This time, Governor Pawlenty signed it into law. Between 2010 and now, the city of Farmington went through this process of opening the deputy registrar's office, and two issues came up. Number one is that the existing statute does not cover the 10-mile guideline with regard to the placement of these offices. The second item is that it was the feeling of the department that the city had improperly delegated their authority. for the creation of this facility in the City Hall chambers in Farmington. So what this bill does is it attempts to rectify both those issues and once again allow the City of Farmington to open the Deputy Registrar's office in their office. As I said, there are going to be people who would like to testify here, and I'm happy to allow for their testimony and then answer any questions that may come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, yes, we've been approached by a couple folks who would like to speak about this issue. Members, before we call testifiers forward, questions for Representative Garofalo? Thank you. Seeing none, Mr. Orth, Mr. Hurst, do you have a couple folks you'd like to testify? I have Mr. Orth and Mr. Heil, is it?
Yes.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jeff Orth, the Deputy Registrar in Eagan, and I've been a Deputy Registrar since 1981 and currently serve as the legislative co-chair and one of the board members of the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association. Mm-hmm. Our Deputy Registrars Association, in collaboration with the Department of Public Safety, Director McCormick's here today, approximately 8 years ago, we went through a lengthy process of reviewing the rules for newly created deputy registrar offices. That was a lengthy process, and the current system of rules and regulations for new offices was put in place and by the cooperation between our association and the Department of Public Safety. And we believe that this legislation should be rejected because the rules, it does violate the rules. There are several offices in close proximity to this proposed office that would be impacted negatively by this legislation. And we certainly want to have strong, viable offices as opposed to weakened offices that will not be viable in the long term and successful. And with that, I'd like to turn to my colleague from Apple Valley, the Deputy Registrar, Paul Heil.
Mr. Heil, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and
proceed. Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm Paul Heil from Apple Valley. I've been in business in Apple Valley for 25 years. It's a family-run business, a private business. The deputy registrar business is not a growing business. Our transaction volume remains relatively the same from year to year, and in fact, with the economy, is slowly eroding for all offices. Trying to balance the need for our offices and the filing fees that we get to cover the cost to administrate to the public is very difficult. The metro offices must be 10 miles apart by rule. The rule is so critical that the offices do not need to cannibalize on each other's viability to remain in business. It affects our efficiency. A new office in Farmington would directly encroach on my office and up to other four other offices in the area. It is doubtful that the affected offices would be able to stay in business or viable if another office was added. A new office in Farmington will likely impact my office with a loss of revenue of 10 to 20%. I ask that this registration be rejected because it circumvents the rules administrating deputy registrar's offices, does not meet the approval of the Department of Public Safety and the Division of Driver and Vehicle Services. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Heil. Questions for either the testifiers? The chair just wants to clarify on the agenda you have. It says Eagan Deputy and Apple Valley Deputy Registrar. You actually don't work for the cities. You actually are independent businesses within those cities, correct? Thank you. I just wanted to clarify that was a little misleading on the way the agenda laid it out. Representative Leidinger, question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. This is really a question for you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. Whenever there's a new deputy register, it has to come through this committee? Or is this is first time I've heard this?
As I understand the process, no. The application can be made to Ms. McCormick's office, and if they're with When they meet the criteria, one of the main ones that we're being asked to override here today is they can't be within 10 miles of another deputy registrar. And then it's up to the Department of Public Safety to issue them. When they have to, we have to bend the guidelines that we've given Ms. McCormick's department. That's when they come to us. They ask us to exercise our judgment and decide whether this makes sense or not. And I have a question related to that for Mr. Heil. The Farmington deputy registrar location, how far is that from your place?
Mr. Chair,
within a half a mile or so.
Approximately 8.5 to 9 miles. I haven't, it depends upon which direction you go.
All right. And maybe this is a question for Representative Garofalo. How many other ones are within the 10-mile orbit around where the prior Farmington proposal is?
Mr. Chairman, I would defer to the testifiers, but being a resident of the area, my understanding is there's one in Rosemont, one in Apple Valley, and one in Lakeville.
Okay, that would be within the circle.
That's okay. My understanding. Is that correct?
Okay, further questions, Representative Hornstein?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe Representative Chair Garofalo can correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding in terms of how the original provision, Chapter 321, Section 67, became into law was in the conference committee, I believe Senator Pariseau had this bill in the Senate, but I don't recall that we heard it in the House. And so to the testifiers, were you opposed to this 2 years ago? Is the issue, because 2 years ago was the direction was a municipal registrar, and I think now this legislation is changing it to more of the contracted or private one. Were you, I not having been in following the Senate Transportation Committee, were you also in opposition to the Pariseau bill from 2 years ago?
Mr. Orr?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members. We had our longstanding position as an association is that we supported the existing rules. That being said, we are continuing that position of supporting the existing rules, which means that we should not allow additional offices in close proximity to existing offices, which jeopardizes the existing offices.
Mr. Follow up, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. I mean, I'm sympathetic to your arguments, but I just I wanted to know if there was also opposition to this bill when it passed through the Senate Transportation Committee a couple of years ago. Do you recall being there and opposing it at that time as well?
Mr. Orth, can you recall that?
We, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we were not testifying at that time directly.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Leidinger, I'm sorry, did I get ahead of you? Did you have a follow-up?
No, everything's been answered. I'm fine now.
Good deal. Representative Benson.
This is for, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo. Maybe help me clarify. This was a municipal, and it's now going to be a contracted. However, it's going to be in a municipal building. Can you help me at least understand how the government is involved in helping a private contractor compete against other private contractors?
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Benson. Last year, it was the intent of myself and Senator Pariseau to allow for the creation of this facility and to give the flexibility to the local city to determine how they wanted to implement this. Since then, the department has weighed in and said that the existing language is only allowed under specific, and I'll let them frame their position on it, but basically that the legislation we passed did not identify the criteria available that the city of Farmington wants to use it under. In terms of it's a public-private partnership, the purpose of this is for the city of Farmington to be able to provide new services at the new city hall down in downtown Farmington for the residents in Farmington. We have a lot of our residents, one of the things people want is they want to be able to use facilities locally, they want to shop locally at businesses, they want to use city hall locally. And it's a point, a local issue that people don't like the fact that we have to go to Apple Valley, go to Lakeville to get everything done. So that's sort of the intent. I'll let the department explain the nuances between what was allowed, what their assessment of what was allowed under the legislation and what is not allowed, hence the denial of the application that the city of the city of Farmington put in.
Follow-up, Representative?
Maybe they'll be able to help clarify. I was hoping maybe that you could in terms of it's going to be in the government center.
That's Mr. Chairman, Representative Benson in the City Hall.
So I'm sorry, in the City Hall. And are they going to be charged average rate for rent and those kinds of things? What I'm worried about is setting up an unfair competition to those who have to pay rent and taxes and all the other things, regardless of the fact that it might be convenient for the people of Farmington.
Representative?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Benson, I'm not familiar with the terms of the lease or the contract. I just know that the mayor, the city administrator, have framed it as a public-private partnership.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Garofalo, and maybe DBS has to weigh in on this question, but you're saying that you said, as you said in your testimony, that you that there was some disagreement about whether the city was going to do that and whether the city was giving up their authority. I mean, are there different rules if it's a municipal-run deputy registrar or a DBS office as opposed to a privately run one? Is that what the problem is here?
Representative Garofalo, you can answer, or we have actually the expert sitting in the audience who's indicated a willingness to come and talk exactly about this issue.
Mr. Chairman, I always find it helpful that if I try to answer a question before the expert, so the expert can tell the committee why I'm wrong. No, that's fine. Let's hear from the experts.
Well, let's spare you that, and we'll ask Ms. McCormick to come down.
Gee darn, I wanted to.
Any other questions before they go?
Oh, certainly.
Do you guys have any other questions?
Are there any, Mr. Orth, or any other questions for Mr. Orth or Mr. Heil before we turn them loose? And Representative Szymanski?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For a point of information, what the respective communities, what's the population of the various communities that we're talking about here?
Mr. Orth or Mr. Heil, either one.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I believe Egan is 62,000.
Mr. Chairman, I think Appleby is right in the 40s.
Okay.
Farmington and Rosemont are both about 21, 23,000 each.
You're welcome.
And Lakeville's about 52,000.
Thank you for the information. Gentlemen, thank you. For kind of linger around in case there's more questions. That'd be great. Ms. McCormick. And Ms. McCormick, welcome back. Thank you for your help. Did you remember Representative Nelson's question about what are the procedures for private deputy registrar or a public deputy registrar? And if you can give us kind of the overview of what we're looking at here to help us with our decision.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services. And concern that was reviewed by our legal counsel after us reviewing the application and the contract was that the rules state specifically that in terms of management of the office, the deputy registrar shall not delegate to another person the authority or responsibility of operating the office and shall designate one contact person for the office. In the application that included the contract, that issue was not clear, and the reason that this provision was promulgated into rules was for the department to have clear authority so that in the collection of taxes and fees that we can hold one person accountable for those fees, and so that was the background as to how those rules came about.
Okay. Concerning this application, which was appeared to be a transfer then, that was the difficulty with this particular instance?
Mr. Chair, that was correct. There was two different applications, so the location issue that's been referred to had to do with the driver's license office because of the fact that this was passed by law, and at that time the location requirements were exempt because of the way the statutory language was. We didn't look at that issue in terms of the motor vehicle deputy registrar appointment, but as you know, we have two separate appointments the commissioner makes. If the deputy office also serves as a driver license agent, then they have a whole nother set of rules that they have to meet. And because the statute talked about it just being a motor vehicle to operate for motor vehicle transactions, that was the reason that with the location came into play in terms of the driver license office. So that's why we had two different letters, and we and they had Farmington had completed two different applications that were both reviewed by our legal counsel.
Representative Nelson, does that kind of get at your question or look what you, the information we needed?
I think it does. Yeah, I kind of understand.
Thank you, Ms. McCormick. The 10-mile circle, is that as the crow flies, or is that on the best route on the surface streets?
Mr. Chair, that's as the crow flies.
Thank you. That's a legal term, members, by the way. Further questions, or Representative Nelson? Oh, Representative Gauthier said it. Well, yeah. Nelson, go ahead and wrap up, and then we'll go to Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, is there any place else in the city of Farmington where this could be located other than City Hall?
Representative Garofalo?
To meet the correct requirements.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think the issue right now under current law, my understanding, and I don't want to speak for the department, is that if they opened up a private facility, that this would actually be allowed. Is that correct? And but the term of the contract is not allowed. So the answer to your question is yes, but it's not what we want to do.
A lot of things I don't want to do.
Yeah, I'll let the department speak to it, but I believe that's my understanding, though.
Well, Representative Gauthier, do you have further questions?
No, I just wanted to know that.
Well, I think good questions being asked for the committee's consideration, so let the chair rephrase it. As I'm thinking on my mental map of the locations of Apple Valley, Rosemount, and Lakeville, is it possible to slide this a little bit to the south and accomplish the 10-mile diameter, and that's one question, I suppose, for Ms. McCormick. Or are you not in the position of sending them back a map with a new suggested site?
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the department never takes a position on legislation regarding deputy registrar appointments. And so I'm not going to take a position, but obviously, as I've said before, we work with whoever the applicant is, mm-hmm. We let them know what the concerns are, but we traditionally do not take a position on appointments if they're made statutorily. So I can't really say other than yes, if it was that certainly we would look at all the requirements that are needed in terms of us to be able to approve an application. And we would point out concerns that we had when we work with an applicant. So that's all I can really say.
So this, Representative Garofalo.
Just to say to that point is that it's important to recognize that the City Hall in Farmington, one of the big benefits, one of the big drivers is the fact that it's already a constructed facility. The city already owns it. They already have heating, cooling, security costs. So, I don't want to speak on behalf of the city. I think one of the big benefits is leveraging an existing facility.
Understood. So, thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess for Ms. McCormick, if we pass this, are we opening opening up a can of worms where our Pandora's box, where a whole bunch of other people are going to come and want to have special dispensation to get around the rules? Or is this something that's kind of handled on a time-by-time basis? Is there a lot of these that come up over the years?
Ms. McCormick?
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, since I've been with DVS in various positions, there's been several pieces of legislation dealing with deputy registrar appointments. So I would say that that it's not unusual to have legislation, but certainly that could happen. I just don't know. It's hard for me to say. So.
Further questions or comments before Representative Hornstein?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And so you had answered my first question preemptively, because I was going to ask whether the DVS has a position on this legislation. You said you don't take one, but can you recall, Ms. McCormick, if there's precedent for this kind of a carve out prior to what we did in the omnibus bill in 2010, in terms of not staying within this 10-mile guideline, I guess it is. Can you recall if this has happened before?
Ms. McCormick, I can think of one. Can you?
Mr. Chair, yes, I can recall one or two.
Speaking of Burnsville, immediately, that was maybe 3 or 4 years ago when the city of Burnsville was moving theirs around, and I think they actually had waivers originally from the affected adjoining deputies, if I'm not mistaken, which is part of the provision, but then they continually moved it from one location to the other within the city, and so we had to have legislation to allow that to happen.
And Mr. Chair, I think Representative Clark had something a while back, but I don't remember how that...
They don't seem to happen often, but they do happen from time to time, yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one question. How many other municipal registers are there? I mean, is there a lot of them around the state, or...
Mr. McCormick, you know that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Vogel, I don't recall how many there are. It could be that the MDRA has that information. I'd have to go back and check to make sure how many there were.
We could ask Mr. Orth if he wanted to, or Mr. Hirsch, because there are private registrars and municipal registrars. They could be a couple different things. So, Mr. Hirsch, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, you know the drill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jim Hurst on behalf of the Deputy Registrars Association. In reference to the question that was raised by you, Representative Vogel, within a couple, there's a total of 175 offices across the state of Minnesota, of which I believe roughly 75 are private operators. And then the remaining 100, I believe it is somewhere around 60 to 65 county, and the balance roughly 35 city. But I will double check my numbers and get back to you, but I believe it's in that ballpark.
Representative Vogel? Good. Further questions for Representative Garofalo or any of the testifiers? Is there anyone else in the audience that feels compelled to help testify for or against the proposed legislation? Seeing none, Representative Garofalo, we will wrap it up before we lay this over for possible inclusion.
And that's it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the hearing.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming down. Members, with that, we'll lay the bill over for possible inclusion. Representative Vogel, House File 493. And Representative Vogel, when you move your bill, it is destined for the general register, apparently.
Yes, correct, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
House File 493, move to recommend to pass, move the general register, Representative Vogel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, basically this bill would allow the central repository or keeping of the data for automobile places and dealerships. And I have with me Alyssa Schlander. I'm going to let her speak to the bill itself. We also have an amendment.
Mr. Vogel, I see your A1 amendment. Is that your amendment?
That is.
If you'd like to move it, we'll discuss it.
Well, before we move that, I'd also like to make an oral amendment to the amendment.
Please proceed with the oral amendment. Mr. Burris, you listening?
Okay, what we'd like to do is to incorporate after line 1.1 of the amendment, insert page 1, comma, line 17, comma, and strike however, comma. Mr. Burris already has that, Mr. Chair. So,
Mr. Burris, could you explain that to us again?
Mr. Chair and members, this oral amendment would be to be incorporated into the H0490493A1 amendment, and it would, looking at the original House File 493 language, on page 1, line 17, strike the word however, comma. That's a technical cleanup.
Okay. Members, we understand the amendment. Discussion to it? Seeing none, let's vote. Oh, Representative Nelson.
This.
The letter
two.
T?
The T of
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, the revisor's office will take care of that with the engrossment.
It's that new revisor program we bought a couple years ago. They'll catch those things. But thanks for asking. Further discussion? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask Ms. Schlander to speak to the bill now, if that's okay.
Ms. Schlander, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Alyssa Schlander. I'm with the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association. This bill is a pretty easy one. Now that it's been amended, we should have no opposition to the bill. It basically streamlines a couple of areas of regulations that pertain to automobile dealerships here in Minnesota. Section 1 of the bill helps us it gives us an easier way of calculating vehicle registration tax on vehicles that are coming out of a daily rental fleet. So like when Avis or Hertz, you know, turns over some of their fleet and they want to sell them back into the stream of commerce. When we're trying to sell, the thing with a daily rental fleet company is that they have the ability to buy registration for their vehicles just 4 months at a time. So when we have the vehicle and we're trying to sell the vehicle to a customer, you know, everybody else in the world has to buy registration for 12 months at a time. And there is just some confusion there when there has been a partial registration by a rental company about how much registration tax we're supposed to purchase for a customer at the point of sale. So instead of us trying to figure out, well, they bought 8 months, so we're only supposed to buy 4 months for the customer to get them back on track, all this bill does is it says that if Avis bought, you know, 8 months of registration and then we want to sell the vehicle to the customer, then we sell them 12 months of registration no matter what. So that sort of the one-year clock starts running at the point of sale. So it's just an easier way of calculating the registration tax for those particular kinds of vehicles, and then nobody's overpaying or getting involved in refunds and that kind of thing. And then Section 2 of the bill is really pretty easy. We are just asking to have the ability to petition the department when there is a multi-dealership group that is at least two dealerships that are owned and managed by the same company. They want the ability to be able to have some ability to have some centralized record keeping so that they can take advantage of some efficiencies with respect to just physical office space where they store their physical records. So, as you can see, Mr. Chair and members, this is very controversial.
We'll see about that, Ms. Schlander. Members, are there questions to the bill?
Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll oppose now. Just
Representative Nelson.
No. That's sort of like bringing on the consent calendar.
Something like that. No. Seems to attract all kinds of mischief. Oh, seriously, are there any questions for Ms. Schlander or Representative Vogel? Anybody else in the audience like to testify for or against this bill before we, and it's going where again, remind me?
General Register, please.
Summing remarks, Representative Vogel, before we let you skate on back to your chair.
Well, I just want to thank you for allowing me to get out of here without being tormented today. I'd ask that we just pass this and move it to the General Register.
Well, thank you. Seriously, Ms. Schlander, thank you. I know we've been working on centralized record keeping and the 12-month cycle for several years, so it's nice to see we've actually got some assent to making this work, and good luck as it moves forward. Members, seeing no further discussion, I'm going to ask that we vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the bill is passed to the General Register. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
You're welcome. Representative Biskins has a simple little towing bill. Representative Biskins, would you like to move your bill? And this is going to be aimed at the General Register as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'd like to move House File 1361 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register.
Thank you, Representative Biskins. You also have an A11-0326 amendment. Is that your amendment?
It is, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a delete-all amendment. I know we hate to be surprised by a delete-all amendment, but it is fairly simple. So Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would like to move the delete all amendment, and then, Mr. Chair, prior to us voting on the delete all amendment, I would like to modify the delete all amendment.
Okay, Representative Biskins has a modification to the DE amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair, before I make the modification, I am going to ask Mr. Burris, I received an email from you stating that the words under section 168B.09 is no longer needed. Is that still correct?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, that's not correct with the delete all. That reference I would recommend staying in place with the way the delete all is now.
Then, Mr. Chair, I would like to modify my amendment on page 1, line 7, strike the quotation mark. It seems to be dangling out there for no apparent reason.
Let's see.
Right?
We'll just incorporate that into
Mr.
Burris, do you have an explanation for why there is
Mr. Chair and members, that quotation mark ends the piece that's being inserted. The starting quotation mark is at the beginning of 1.3. So typically with amendments, the entire provision is quoted, and then there's sometimes quotes within the outer quotes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then I'd like to offer the delete all amendment without amendment.
Discussion to the DE amendment now that we got our quote marks back in. Good deal. Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The bill is amended as you wish, Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. As you look at this section of law, subdivision 12, you will notice that under current law, if a private impound lot were to even create a contract with a unit of government, and not even accepting a single vehicle, but just simply by the means of having that contract, this private impound lot is now defined in statute to be a public impound lot. Mr. Chairman, that does create some consternation that we'd like to clean up. And so, Mr. Chairman, if it be your pleasure, I'd like to introduce my testifier, one of my testifiers, former State Representative Rob Layton.
Mr. Layton, welcome to the committee, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Rob Layton. I'm with the law firm of Nolan Thompson Layton, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Professional Towing Association. And this is an effort to simply clarify the present law, which has caused some problems. In the past, some of you may be aware that towing issues can become controversial. This is not one of them. When towing issues arise, sometimes legal aid has an interest. Sometimes the city of Minneapolis or St. Paul, which have public impound lots, is interested, or the League of Minnesota Cities. I want you to know that we've talked to representatives from all of those entities and, in fact, worked with the city of Minneapolis on putting some language into the delete all that actually they favored, and were pleased to do that. So that there's no known opposition to this bill. I think in your packets is a letter from Ron Elwood of Legal Aid saying that he's reviewed it. He doesn't have any problem with it. So we're not aware of any opposition. Actually, this fix, Mr. Chairman, was, I believe, addressed in an omnibus policy bill in the last biennium. I know Senator Murphy was helpful in doing this, but that bill was vetoed by the governor, so we're back now trying to fix this issue. And that's what the fix is. The problem is, if you're a private impound lot, owned and operated by a private business, if a police station asks you to tow in a car, or you have an agreement with the city to do that at their request, the current law would say that your private lot now becomes a public impound lot. We don't believe that that makes any sense. We think that's why all the parties are in agreement with this fix. So with that, I would like to turn it over to two members of the Minnesota Professional Towing Association for very brief testimony. Mark Bonstrom of Mark's Towing, he lives in Eagan, and Art Smith of Automedics, who lives in Blaine, and will briefly discuss the need for this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Layton. Mr. Bonstrom, Mr. Smith, please. Welcome to the committee, and if you'd restate your name and your business for the record, we'd appreciate that.
My name's Art Smith from Automatics in Blaine, Minnesota. Mr. Chairman, committee members, what we're trying to do is just verify a law. What happens now is the public reads it, and they feel that we are a public impound lot instead of a private impound lot because we tow for the police departments. There's a difference in storage times to keep the vehicle. There's a difference in you have to give the money back to the person if you sell a car. Basically, we're just trying to make it simple and easy so people understand it.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Bostrom.
Mark Bostrom from Eagan, Minnesota. I own Mark's Towing. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we're just trying to make it be a little clearer. It really won't change any of the practices that we've done since the inception of impound lots. We've always had a different set of, not different set of rules, but a longer time that we need to hold our cars and stuff than Minneapolis and St. Paul, and that isn't going to change anything at all. That's just what we're trying to clearly define.
Okay, I think that's clear to us, but members, are there questions for the testifiers? Representative Hornstein?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and as a veteran of some of these towing fights, mostly on behalf of Legal Aid, I do support this. I appreciate it, and I would urge colleagues to support the Biskens-Nelson Impound Lot Reform Act of 2011.
Sounds like your re-election bill, Representative Nelson. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming and testifying. Anyone else in the audience like to testify for or against this bill or on this issue? Representative Biskens, would you like the last word before we
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. If you notice, the letter from Legal Aid is not signed by Mr. Elwood, and so I'm going to rectify that, and it will go on my wall right next to my congratulatory letter from the ACLU. I appreciate your support, members.
Further questions or comments for the representative? Seeing none, let's vote. All those in favor signify by aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The bill is passed to the General Register. Sorry, members, I should have renewed the motion before I passed it. Representative Fritz is here. Thank you, Representative Fritz, for your patience. We've been hoping to get to you. And take care of House File 459. May I have a member that would move Representative Fritz's bill, House File 459? And this will, where are we putting it? But we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, probable inclusion in the omnibus bill, I should say. Representative Hausman, would you like to make that motion?
No.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Chairman, for hearing my bill today.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it, especially since it's being heard in the Senate tomorrow. All so right. This is real good timing. What I have before you, members, today is a bill for a memorial sign placement for John Liebenstein. John Liebenstein was a deputy sheriff for the Rice County Sheriff's Department. He was killed near his home, right off of Highway 35. I remember that very clearly, and I have today with me former Sheriff Dick Cook, who was the sheriff at that time when John was killed in the line of duty. He was only 40 years old. He left behind a wife and three children. And a young man at the end of the table here is a student, and he has by the name of Steve Laurie, and he brought this to my attention because he has received some scholarship money to attend college through the Liebenstein Foundation. And I'm going to, at this point, turn this over to Sheriff Cook, if I could, for presentation. And you also do have a handout that does
And that is coming around, members, and Representative Fritz. Yes,
yeah.
We'll see that momentarily.
That Mr. Laurie prepared, so I hope that you all take a look at that. Thank you so much. I do need to, the bill was moved and will be
included.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
And if there's, Representative Fritz, just from me to you, if there's mischief with an omnibus bill, we will come back and move the bill so you'll have it on the General Register for your, if we need to do that, okay?
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Mr. Chairman. And I'm going to turn it over to Sheriff Cook.
Sheriff Cook, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the permanent record, we'd appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Members of the committee, Richard Cook, former Rice County Sheriff. I retired January 4th of this year. I'm here today with Stephen Lowry, who was a student at Minnesota State Mankato, received the John Liebenstein Memorial Scholarship in 2009, and has been helping us put together the information that you see in front of you in an attempt to recognize the ultimate sacrifice that Deputy Liebenstein made. I worked with him for his entire career, and I was there the day that he was brutally murdered. I'm just going to read over what we put together to have it in the record and answer any questions that may come up. On May 3rd, 1996, law enforcement officers from the metro area, Scott County specifically, were pursuing a suspect in a stolen vehicle who was traveling south on Interstate 35 through Rice County in the Dundas Northfield area. Deputy Liebenstein positioned his patrol car at the top of an off-ramp of I-35 at County Road 1 in an attempt to stop the suspect's vehicle being pursued. However, the suspect's vehicle struck his squad car, in fact, intentionally struck the deputy's squad car, accelerating up the ramp in a Lincoln Town Car to a speed of 90 miles an hour in an intentional and vicious act. As a result, Deputy Liebenstein suffered fatal injuries and died at the scene at the age of 40. John Liebenstein was born April 9, 1956. He was raised in Rice County, graduated from Northfield High School, so it has very profound implications for our community. In 1980, he married Jean Bart and farmed the Dundas area while he raised their family. John Liebenstein joined the Sheriff's Office on March 16, 1987, started out as a jailer, advanced to patrol deputy after completing his degree at Minnesota State University, and received a law enforcement degree. He worked as an investigator until his death May 3, 1996. He had been an officer for 9 years. In addition to being a dedicated law enforcement officer, John held seats on the Southeast Peace and Police Officers Association, the Midwest Gang Investigators Association, and he was also very involved in his community, devoted community member, involved in on the Rice County Fair Board, the 4-H Millstown Trail Committee. He's buried in the family plot at Rolling Green Cemetery in Bridgewater Township of Rice County, and as Representative Fritz indicated, he's survived by his widow Jean and at that time 3 young children who are now adults. Today, John continues to be missed and will be forever remembered. Page 2, we put together some reasons to support the Highway Memorial, and I guess I won't go through those. You can look at those at your leisure or as we go move along here. And we just referenced some other memorials. There's a plethora of memorials, highway memorials out there that I'm sure you representatives have seen to different individuals, whether they're known politicians or famous persons in other regards. And there's a few highway memorials for law enforcement officers, and one of them is Timothy Boat, Theodore Foss, and Sean Severe, the most recent up in Lino Lakes. Also with your packet are letters of support from the Rice County Sheriff's Office, Dakota County Sheriff, Northfield Police, Minnesota Police and Peace Officers, Minnesota Law Enforcement Memorial Association, and the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. Next page are those...
Sheriff Cook, I've got about 4 minutes left, and okay. I think MnDOT has something to say as well. We do have the packet, and we appreciate the letters of support, and those will be entered into the official docket here as well. Representative Fritz, did you want Mr. Lowry to say a few words too? Or
if he would, he didn't plan on
that.
You
don't want to put him on the spot, but we appreciate him being here and putting the packet together.
This is a great experience for him, however. If he could just give his name for the record.
Certainly. Please, Mr. Lowry, do that.
Yep. I'm Mr. Chair and community members. My name is Steve Lowry. I, like what Patty said, I earned the John Liebenstein Scholarship as a student at Mankato.
Congratulations.
Thank you, and I'm doing this in honor to give back to his sacrifice, as well as I also am a member of the Minnesota Law Enforcement Memorial Association, and I'm a board member on this.
Well, thank you. Welcome to the committee, and I'm glad you came here today.
Thank you.
Members, are there quick questions for Representative Fritch's on before? I think Ms. Isaacson has a couple words for us of guidance as we move ahead. So, gentlemen, if you could yield Representative Nelson before they leave.
As she's coming down, I guess.
Oh, as she's coming down, okay.
Looking at the bill, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
We don't normally pay for these out of our funds. That has there been money raised to pay for this out of other funds that has already been taken care of?
Representative Fritz, can you speak to that issue?
Well, as I, Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, as I look over to Sheriff Cook, who is a great fundraiser for our area, I'm sure that that will be what we will be doing. At this time, I couldn't tell you if there's any funds.
Representative Nelson, you are correct. Every time we've done this, there has been a local group that's been kind of the engine behind it, and they've raised the funds for the sign.
That's why I raised the question. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. Ms. Isaacson, welcome back.
Mr. Chairman, Cassandra Isaacson with Minnesota Department of Transportation. Actually, in your question, in the bill, line 1.11, that section 161.139, that references a statute that requires non-state source for funding. So we don't install the signs till we get a check. So, with this particular legislation, we absolutely, MnDOT appreciates the sacrifices that law enforcement makes, and we're happy to work with the local community in honoring the deputy. In general, one of the concerns that we do have with this is the number of signs that are being requested, as well as the fact that the signs are being requested on the interstate. Typically, with memorial signs on state highways, two-lane roadways, those sorts of roadways, in your packet you can see the pictures of signs. That top green sign for State Trooper Timothy Bow, that's the example of what we would typically have on a two-lane highway. Currently, the signs, for example, for Ted Foss, that's an arrest area, and that's where we would recommend these signs go. There are quite a few rest areas in the vicinity of this location where we could do something spectacular like this that would, so then the public can pull over, they can take pictures of the signs, walk up to the signs, that sort of thing.
Ms. Isaacson, and we can assume then that the folks from down Faribault Way, either Sheriff Cook or Mr. Lowry from the Law Enforcement Memorial Association, you've worked with those folks before and you can accomplish where the sign goes then? Because the bill is very specific on where they want the signs to go in legislation, and I'm not sure that we may want to alter that before we put it in the omnibus bill. Representative Fritz, are you open to that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, at this point, I do not want to amend the bill. I'd like the bill to stay as it is. And in the Senate, when it's heard, we could probably and certainly must come together to conferee that. But I do want our folks to weigh in further with the MnDOT folks on the site.
Okay. Well, we can't do it in the next 1 minute here. Can I have your nodding assent that you'll work with Ms. Isaacson to work out appropriate locations that will honor the officer? Outstanding. Thank you. For the record, they all nodded their head yes, because I know that's not on the tape, so I just wanted to make that clear. Further questions or comments for either Ms. Isaacson or Representative Fritz? Members, thank you for your attention to the matter. Representative Fritz, thank you for bringing the bill forward. And with that, Representative Hausman renews her motion the bill be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and we'll be watching. I believe Senator Perry has it in the Senate.
He does. Yes.
Before we put the bill together, we'll be in contact about how we want to phrase that language, okay?
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Thank you, members.
You're welcome. Members, just a couple of housekeeping things as that concludes our legislative business for the day. I did get an interesting piece of information. I'm now the designate for the Midwest Interstate Passenger Rail Corporation. This is in your packets. Read it and note it, and we'll just keep you posted on how that's going. As my reading and understand it, I don't believe it affects the current Head Start funding for Central Corridor. April 26th, there's supposed to be a signing ceremony for that. I'll keep you posted if I hear anything differently. And then, members, Monday morning, we have a 10 o'clock start time for our committee on Monday, but Mr. Nisley, you're indicating that that may change? 10 o'clock, sound good? Oh, it's different than the normal time. 10 o'clock. Mr. Nisley was trying to get me to get you to come in here at 7:30, but I prevailed against him. 10 o'clock sounds reasonable for a Monday morning member, so we'll be in room 5, State Office Building, at 10 o'clock on Monday morning. We're adjourned.